we'll design that to make sure that it'll be flexi fuel, so it could burn hydrogen, either as a blend or a full hydrogen mix. But that is certainly going to be needed. We need that locally available firm capacity on the system because of the amount of variable generation we're going to have in the system. We need something that can be really quick response to demand and supply situation.
Welcome to the Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is episode 099, number 99 of the Flux Capacitor. My guest on today's pod is
Peter Gregg, President and CEO of Nova Scotia Power.
Peter joined me for a conversation about the evolving state of electricity in Nova Scotia. Revisiting themes we spoke about 3 years ago on this podcast, we discuss decarbonization of Nova Scotia's electricity system, the impact of federal policies, the increasing frequency and impact of extreme weather, the province's clean power plan, the failure of the Atlantic Loop Initiative and what that says about complex interjurisdictional projects, and how reliability and affordability will be front and center as Nova Scotia aims for an 80% decarbonized grid by 2030. We close the conversation with Peter's recommendation for an addition to the Flux Capacitor Book Club. Here is my conversation with Peter Gregg, recorded on Zoom in mid-June 2024. Peter, welcome back to the podcast. A lot has changed.
Yes, thank you very much, Francis. Looking forward to the chat.
Yeah. So the last time we chatted was, I think, 4 years ago. Pardon me, three years ago. Yeah, okay. 2021. And, you know, as I said just a second ago, a lot has changed since 2021. So maybe if we could kind of pick up from like where we left off in our last conversation.
Sure.
You know, we were talking at the time about the government of Canada had begun talking about net zero 2035, but it wasn't a hard commitment. And so, like, you know, one of the big things that's changed since then is now we've seen, you know, some of the carrots and some of the sticks, or at least the big stick, the clean electricity regulations intended to deliver upon that. You know, for the listener, we're recording this in mid-June. The conversations around some of those things continue to evolve. But, you know, if we were going to try and update somebody in terms of how much has changed in those kind of intervening 3 years, what would you say is the kind of the biggest thing that is concerning you? Is it the carrots or is it the sticks?
Well, you know, I guess if I answered the first part of that question, what's concerning me more probably now than 3 years ago is simply the customer affordability challenge, more simply. We've always been trying to solve for this trilemma of, you know, it's got to be reliable, we've got to decarbonize, and it's got to be affordable. But, you know, since 2021, we've seen an incredibly inflationary environment. Inflation still has not come down to where I think a lot of people expected it to be. And we've got a lot of people in Nova Scotia, our customers, who are suffering from energy poverty.
Right.
And so that's more of what I worry about, is that policy needs to reflect those challenges. And so we're all on board with, you know, our own provincial requirements to be off coal 2030, 80% renewable by 2030. And, you know, the direction toward net zero, we're fully supportive of as well. But it's got to be done in a way that respects the most affordable path for our customers. A bunch of different ways, I think, of doing that. And so back to your carrots and sticks, I think some of the carrots, you know, we just had our grid scale battery project approved by our regulator here in Nova Scotia yesterday. So it's a big step for us, and we're the beneficiaries of an investment tax credit. For that, or I should say our customers are beneficiaries of that. Also beneficiaries of a significant grant from Natural Resources Canada, also beneficiaries of low-cost financing from Canada Infrastructure Bank. So the carrots, I think, are starting to come together in packages that create some more customer affordable solutions. And I really like how that's working. Some of the sticks, you know, and I guess if you just focus on CERs, just can, like many worry that maybe what we're seeing in draft regulations is too restrictive. And again, we're supportive. We know we need to get to a decarbonized future. We're moving there anyway. And you hear our provincial officials talk about creating a green hydrogen industry in Nova Scotia that is going to be powered by wind, creating an offshore wind industry in Nova Scotia. So we're going there anyway. So I think we've got to have regulations in place at both the provincial and federal level that recognize the strategic goals of each region of the country, but also respect that, you know, everybody has to do it a little differently, and we've got to keep customer affordability front and center.
It's interesting. I went back and listened to our previous podcast from back in 2021, and the message is pretty much the same from you and from Nova Scotia Power.
I hadn't listened.
Yeah,
so I'm glad I'm consistent.
Yeah, no, you are. I mean, when we spoke back in 2021, like, your starting point was affordability for customers, and you know, in terms of like what's changed since then. And you're right, we've gone through a period of significant run up of inflation since then, significant increase in interest rates. To heights that, for those of us who are a little bit older, were not unknown, but for a lot of people, yeah. You know, it was certainly surprising. And the other thing that you'd mentioned a couple of years back as well was, you know, the support for the destination here, but a concern about what are the affordability on customer impacts. And you also spoke last time about reliability and concerns about reliability.
Those are the things, right? And I think back to reliability, perhaps for a moment, you know, that continues to be a challenge for us. And I know others across the country that extreme weather events are way more frequent.
Yeah.
And so our approach to reliability needs to change, I think. You know, we're putting a lot of money into vegetation management, and that's the best bang for the buck. But, you know, we're starting to think about things like, you know, non-traditional approaches to dealing with reliability. So does it make sense for us to be putting batteries in people's homes, or leveraging an electric car battery in the home as well? It's a very expensive undertaking to think of batteries across every home in the province. But I think we need to start thinking about just accept that extreme weather is here to stay, and that we need to design a system that can actually allow our customers to ride through those events through other technological means like batteries or something else. I think it's a conversation we need to have more of, and how to pay for it. Back to the affordability challenge, haven't figured that out yet, but certainly sitting on the North Atlantic, we're really at the front end of a lot of the more extreme weather events.
Yeah, we look back over the last 3 years, and you know, we've had a number of like 1 in 10 year and 1 in 100 year storms that have come through.
We expect them every year now, basically. You know, it used to be every 10 years, maybe, but the last, you know, it was only 2 years ago we had Fiona, which is the largest hurricane in Canadian history. Last year we had two tropical storms. Hit almost identical paths. And then, you know, we keep a really close eye on the Atlantic Ocean temperatures, surface temperatures throughout the year. And unfortunate to say that, you know, another record high coming out of this winter in terms of those temperatures. So I think all the meteorologists are expecting it's going to be an active hurricane season. I hope we don't have to respond to those things, but we need to plan to respond to those things every year now.
The other thing that was unusual was wildfires last year in every region of the country, including outside of Halifax, right? I mean, that was unheard of.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time on that since. So it was really almost unheard of. You're right. I think part of that was we had a really, really dry winter, early spring last year. but also still a lot of dead wood on the ground from the previous year. So we had a fair amount of fuel
Right.
in certain parts of the province that were contributing to that, but it really wasn't exceptionally dry. Late winter, early spring that led to that. And I think, a lot of us probably thought it's not a big risk here. But we learned that it is. So we focused a lot more attention on that. We're very involved with groups that Electricity Canada supports, but also across North America in terms of wildfire working groups that EEI structures, and making sure we've got the best asset management plans in place. But if you remember last year, yes, we had the fires. They got a lot of attention. We had record cold temperatures last February,
Right.
February 23, that we hit our all-time peak due to that. A couple months later, we had the fires. But a month after that, record floods. And so we saw almost all of it last year in terms of what extreme weather can throw at us. It's just a reminder that that we are in that period of many much more frequent extreme weather events for sure.
Yeah. One of the things that we chatted about as well the last time was we talked about the Maritime Link because during our last conversation it was just starting to come online, and that was going to be critical for Nova Scotia as no and Nova Scotia Power's objective of moving away from coal by 2030. So 3 years later, Maritime Link is core now
It is.
to how things operate.
It is. Unfortunate that events in Newfoundland delayed that Muskrat Falls project. So we weren't able to see the deliveries of that energy as early as we would have hoped. And probably, right around the time you and I were talking last time, we were just starting to see those deliveries.
Yeah.
Pleased to say that we're seeing really robust deliveries across that link. And so for those who don't know, it's a subsea cable that connects Cape Breton Island and ultimately down to mainland Nova Scotia into Newfoundland and the Muskrat Falls Generating Station. We've got the goal to be 80% renewable energy by 2030. Where we sit today is about 43%, and a little less than half of that 43% is coming steadily from the Maritime Link.
Right.
And so it is a really, really important part of our RES compliance currently, and it will continue to play an important part as we move forward. And I think it speaks to, one of the themes that I think we're seeing more generally in the industry around regional collaboration, that using the resources or the geography that might bless one region, and move those electrons to other regions that would benefit from those. And we're certainly seeing that exemplified in that Maritime Link connecting our two provinces.
Yeah, so if you're hitting third, what did you say, the 43% now, roughly, of non-emitting, what's the net, the other 37% going to look like when you project out to 2030? Where's it going to come from?
It's a great question. So we've worked really hard with the province of Nova Scotia to align on what we're calling the Clean Power Plan for Nova Scotia.
Okay.
And it sets out all of the components that will be required between now and 2030 to accomplish that. I mentioned earlier, we just got approval of our grid scale battery project. So
Yep.
350 megawatt battery installations in different parts of the province, strategically connected to our transmission grid, 4 hour duration, 50 megawatt. That is really important in terms of being able to integrate much more wind onto the system. So the biggest piece is going to be onshore wind between now and 2030. The province will procure 1,000 or perhaps a little bit more than 1,000 megawatts of wind to add to the already 600 megawatts of wind on our system. And just to put that in perspective, so that peak I mentioned in February 23 was just over 2,400 megawatt demand.
Right.
Record peak. That really used all of our available resources at that time to be able to meet demand. And so 2,400 megawatts, and we're talking about having 1,600 megawatts of wind on that system. So from a percentage renewable integration, we'll probably have on a percentage basis, the highest level of renewable integration of anywhere in North America, I would think, by the time that's done. So grid-scale batteries enable that amount of wind to come on the system. We also are working closely with our friends in New Brunswick to develop a new transmission tie line,
right,
to connect the provinces. We've already got one 345 kV transmission connection. We want to parallel that one so that we have the ability to move power both ways across that that transmission connection. That will be exceptionally important for us. Solar will play a role, more a smaller role, but you'll see it in a number of applications. We will still be relying on our hydro fleet. So a lot of work to make sure that we extend the lives of that hydro fleet. We will still need thermal assets. And so Tufts Cove Generating Station, the iconic red and white towers down the Halifax Harbor, natural gas fired generation, we'll still need to have that fast acting gas generator on our system. And then we will need some more fast acting gas generation. And so we're contemplating approximately a 300 megawatt fast acting gas. We'll design that to make sure that it'll be flexi fuel, so it could burn hydrogen,
right,
either as a blend or a full hydrogen mix. But that is certainly going to be needed. We need that locally available firm capacity, fast acting capacity on the system because of the amount of variable generation we're going to have on the system. We need something that can be really quick, response to demand and supply situations. So it's those pieces. There's obviously going to be a demand management plan that we work with our partners at Efficiency One that'll continue to play an important role. But really those big pieces that I just articulated to you really do contemplate the plan to get from here to 2030.
You'd mentioned the doubling the link to New Brunswick. So when we spoke 3 years ago, there was talk of this new idea, this terrific idea that the federal government was very enthusiastic about at the time, called the Atlantic Loop, and we're not talking about the Atlantic Loop anymore.
No, we're not. And when I talked about that clean power plan, and that we work closely with the province, That was part of the work we did in parallel with the loop. The challenge with the loop, unfortunately, was so many parties involved in making that happen.
Right.
The cross jurisdictional issues of going from Nova Scotia to New Brunswick to Quebec, federal government involvement, multi stakeholders. You know, discussions around where does the benefit really lie in that loop? Who really shares those benefits? How do we share those benefits? We'd had some really good, productive conversations along the way, I think. But it just got to a point where at some point, I know this is audio, so you can't see the video, but on my wall, I've got a countdown clock to January 1st, 2030. It happens to be 2027 days today to get there. And at some point, you've got to say, can we feasibly rely on one large project to get us there in time?
Right.
And unfortunately, that's where we sort of got to. And so we recalibrated and said, there are other ways of doing this. Like every utility, we do an integrated resource plan. There's not always one plan, you're the iterations of that plan. So we were guided by the integrated resource plan and said, well, we don't think we can do the loop anymore. What's it going to take to get us there? And that's where we got the clean power plan.
Okay.
Now, I do think back to the loop, I do think larger regional transmission connections are a part of the future for sure. Right. I think the Maritime Link was a bold one that our company Emera was able to do. I do think it's a really important part of the future. And part of the thinking of that loop, you'll recall, was, we've got great variable resources here in Nova Scotia. We've got really good wind resource, both on and offshore.
Right.
Hydro-Quebec's got incredible storage capabilities. And so the idea of sort of matching those two things in terms of the benefits we've got on either end and how can we all benefit from that. There was something really interesting there that I think will likely be revisited in the future. And even our province has recently talked about that Atlantic Loop, not now, but perhaps in the future, right, as we look towards, 2040, 2050, would a strategic resource like that be valuable? I think we all think it would be, but it just can't be conceived as part of the 2030 solution at this point.
Yeah, 2030 being so close.
That's right.
It's from a planning standpoint, it's tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah. So 2050, if there is this greater regional cooperation and collaboration, unlocking the massive potential you have for offshore wind, it would suggest as well that we're going to be needing a lot more transmission too. It sounds, because otherwise agree. It won't work.
Completely so, agree. We've got a small market here. We've got a vast resource. And we've got a small domestic market.
Yeah.
And so the challenge for us, especially for offshore wind, and listen, it's early days for that industry, but we've got the shared goal with the province to develop that, and market access will be the big issue for us, and that will require transmission for sure.
There is now, I don't know if it's legislation that's passed or it's proposed, but you're going to be getting a system operator, aren't you?
We are, and yes, that's Bill 404, and it did pass the spring session.
And you are a former system operator yourself.
I don't know if I was the system operator. I had the privilege of leading the Ontario system operator. But yes, I've got some experience there.
Yeah, so, but it's a different market. It's a different space.
It is.
It will be a very different kind of system that they'll be looking at setting up a system operator for.
It is. And, some might say it's a small system. Why do you need a system operator? I've certainly heard that. And certainly on a smaller system, we need to work really closely with the province as they stand up the new system operator, do that in as efficient and as a cost-effective way as possible. And we're doing that. We're working really, really closely with the province on all of the efforts to stand up the new system operator. And we are supportive of it. Right. And so working really closely together. I think, what I just talked about developing that important resource of offshore wind, I think you step back and look at that, and how does the province of Nova Scotia, how do the residents of Nova Scotia benefit from the development of an industry like that? And you can say the same for the green hydrogen industry.
Yeah.
Having an independent system operator who can do long-range planning, all the generation procurement and all the system ops in a purely independent fashion. Remember, we're an investor-owned utility. And I think the benefit of having it stood up purely outside of our walls independently, especially as we look at what could be once in a lifetime development of a new industry, that offshore wind industry, that has a marked increase in GDP per capita in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
Having that done purely outside of the walls of an investor-owned utility, I'm sure there's some benefit to that. The independence that comes with making those decisions. And even though I'm confident we would try to make the best decisions in the interest of Nova Scotia, the perception would always be, are we profit-driven in that kind of advice? And so I do think that on its own is justification for having the system operator to oversee what is going to be a massive amount of change in this market over the coming years.
Yeah. What's the timing of that likely to be, just in terms of when you figure an effective and functioning system operator will be up and running? And
I don't think I can put a date on it at this point. Still trying to sort that out with the province. I believe the legislation had a guideline of 24 months from passage of the legislation to have it stood up, and we're still working on all that. I think it's going to be a phased stand up, frankly. I don't think it'll be a big bang. I think it'll be a phased, and that's what we're working on with the province of what's phase one look like and how quickly can we get that done and then move on to phase two. So I'm reluctant to put a date on it because I don't think we've landed on that yet.
Sure. Okay. So if we take a look at some of the challenges that you're facing, kind of projecting out to 20, well, you've got a 2030 targets, and then you've got targets, I think, as a company for net zero out in, is it 2050 timeframe? Is your
yeah.
Your yeah. So what are you seeing as the biggest barriers to be able to achieve? I mean, we've touched on a bunch of issues already, but like, what are the really big barriers that you think you're going to have to overcome to be able to deliver upon what are pretty significant objectives? Net zero in any time frame is certainly going to be a challenge.
Well, certainly policy stability would be a benefit for sure. Okay,
policy stability, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not naive to think we're going to get a hell of a lot of that. We're going to have a lot of potential for political change, in the next year or so.
Yep.
Certainly federally, there'll be a number of provincial elections. I forget the stat, but how many elections are going to be held in the world in the next year, but it's like a record. So there's a lot of chance for political change, but I can wish for policy stability. And then the biggest one that I worry about, already touched on it, is this affordability piece.
And
I think with the amount of change that needs to happen to decarbonize and meet policy objectives for that, both provincially and federally, to build a system that can withstand the more extreme weather events we've got, I don't think we can ask ratepayers to pay for that alone. I think there's a point at which they're going to really push back, and there's going to be a legitimate affordability challenge. And so I think we need to rely on federal governments. And listen, I get it that it's either a ratepayer or taxpayer who pays for this, and it's the same person, but just the tools, they do need to be different. So, I mentioned, grants that we've seen, some of those. I think the work that the Canada Infrastructure Bank has been really innovative on a number of fronts, and I think we're going to need to continue to have tools like that. We're going to need to have some regulatory creativity. Those two words probably don't go together very well.
Certainly not often,
But ways to think more about, how do we spread what are potentially one-time significant costs to decarbonize or deal with a weather challenge? How do we spread that out over a longer period of time? I think we're going to need that. And I think all of that is going to need a dialogue amongst all of those parties and the public to a degree. to really explain, what's the challenge we're trying to solve for? How much money is that going to cost? And then, say, and then here's how we're collectively going to agree how to pay for it.
Right.
That in itself is a huge challenge and can be a barrier to slowing the action down that, we all know needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we project out to 2050, just speculating, how different do you think the company is going to look? Because right now you're a vertically integrated electricity company with a pretty diversified portfolio of generation. You've got thermal, you've got hydro. Yeah. How different potentially could the company look when you project out to 2050? Yeah.
We've been spending a lot of time thinking about that. And our strategy. It potentially looks very different, especially if you're out that far.
Yeah.
So obviously, coal generation's gone in the near term. Mm-hmm. There's a role, until some other technology is developed, there is a role for whatever fast-acting generation capacity resource that's needed here. Maybe that is green hydrogen. Out in 2050, if the economics have time to develop. But I think we're going to need to have that. I think, you know, you'll continue to see the role of storage. I'm really excited about our projects getting approved. I think the role of storage. And I think, you know, transmission is going to be a big piece of our business in the future. I really do. I believe in the offshore wind resource here. I think it's a really important opportunity. I've been saying to people around here that I think offshore wind is to Nova Scotia what hydro has been to Quebec for the last number of decades. Not only can they use it for their own resources, but there's a massive export opportunity. And I think it's our challenge to figure that out, not only just the utility, us working with the province and with Nova Scotians on all of that. But I think a large piece of our focus is going to be on transmission. And then, you know, all the grid modernization piece of it with the electrification of transportation and of buildings, the distribution network's going to look very different as well. I don't think that's unique to Nova Scotia. I think that'll be the same pretty much everywhere. But it's an exciting time to contemplate all of that change. It's an industry that, you know, change has happened more gradually in the past, and so the pace of that change is certainly picking up, and we've got to make sure we're ready for it.
How different is it likely going to look for the customer? I mean, you mentioned the you know, at the distribution level, things will change. Presumably how the customer is using electricity is going to change significantly. You'd mentioned transportation, but
yeah, I think it's going to be the dominant source, right? And I think we've already got a pretty high penetration of electric heat pumps in this province.
Okay.
They work really well here. I think we'll continue to see that. And so more and more people are using an electric appliance to heat and cool their home.
Right.
So that'll continue. And I think that'll be pretty universal in the not too distant future. You know, Halifax is electrifying their bus fleet. We're working with them on trying to figure out how to electrify the ferries that go across the harbor, which I'm excited about. So you'll see that. We are starting to see some penetration of EVs. I think we're probably a little further behind other parts of the country on that. But we have an exciting new announcement coming up in the not too distant future around some more charging stations. So you'll see that. And so, you know, a lot more of people's lives are going to depend on the product we sell, which is an exciting opportunity for a business like Nova Scotia Power. What I worry about is the biggest barrier to that is reliability.
Yeah.
Because what we've experienced with the weather events is that way more frequent outages, the duration of those, depending on the scale of the event, can be long as well. And so if we're asking our customers to use more of our product to power their daily lives, our customers, rightfully so, are going to say, as long as it's reliable. And the more customers count on us for other aspects of their lives, we've really got to figure that out. That is a challenge. And I don't think it's a challenge unique to Nova Scotia. We may be at the pointy end of the stick on this one. But when I think about what are the barriers to that electrified future, reliability is going to be a big one for sure.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Peter, one of the things that I ask everybody that comes on the podcast is I ask for a book recommendation, and we've assembled all of our book recommendations into our Flux Capacitor book club. And the last time we chatted, you had an interesting book recommendation. It was about 9/11. In fact, I guess we chatted around about the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and you'd recommended The Looming Tower.
Yes.
Which I think was subsequently then turned into like a mini series on.
It was, and I watched that too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a great addition to our reading list. So what today would be your addition to the reading list?
Yeah, I look back on that. It's reflective of the person probably. So I don't know what this says, but the book I'm reading now, I just looked up the title to make sure I got it. It's called G-Man, J. Edgar Hoover and the Making of the American Century. And I don't know why I got a Kindle for Christmas. And I really like, I didn't think I'd like a Kindle, but I really like a Kindle. I'm on a plane for a fair amount, and it's just nice to have in the backpack. And I downloaded that onto my Kindle, and I've really been enjoying it. I just always sort of had a bit of a fascination with the formation of the FBI, and you're someone who spent a lot of time in Washington, as I have too, and seeing that big building walking past a lot, just a curiosity. And then it's just been a fascinating read. I've not done it yet. It's a huge book, but just, his longevity, very controversial and interesting figure, longevity through various political cycles, and over a career that spanned more than 50 years, really did have a lot of influence on the development of the US over the last century. And so it's a really heavy biography, but it's actually a really interesting one.
And I'm just saw it here. It is a Pulitzer Prize winning book. So it was the winner of the 2023 Pulitzer Prize in biography.
No, I didn't
So,
even, I don't think I knew that before now. But it's quite good. It's so, it's not, is I don't pretend that it's any kind of light reading. It'll take me probably a long time to get it done, but I've really been enjoying it so far.
All right. So the addition this time to our reading list is G-Man, J. Edgar Hoover and the Making of the American Century, and it is by Beverly Gage.
Right.
You're reading it on the Kindle, so but
On a Kindle.
if you had it in hardcover, it's
The 1200 pages.
864
Oh,
pages.
okay. It's a little shorter than I thought, but it's a big one. But yeah, a big shout out to the Kindle. It's great.
You're so you don't miss the sort of the high touch. If you've gone
I
all
thought
high
I
tech
would.
instead of high touch,
I
yeah.
thought I would, and that's why I've sort of avoided it. But I'm glad my kids got it for me for Christmas, and I'm glad because it's just so easy. It's so light and so easy. I just leave it in my backpack. It holds a charge forever, so it's always ready. And just if I find, and mainly it's my plane reading. I find myself on a plane, I'll just pull it out and read.
There's mine.
There you go. It's exactly like
Oh, you got the same Kindle as me. Yeah.
that.
Incredibly handy. Peter, always great to catch up. I really appreciate the opportunity to get you back on the podcast. Thanks very
Thanks so much,
much.
Francis. It's always fun to spend a little bit of time with you. And so enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Flux Capacitor. Tune in for future episodes. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the Flux Capacitor. You can find me through our website at electricity.ca and through LinkedIn. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 99. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Peter's recommendation, G-Man, J. Edgar Hoover, and the Making of the American Century by Beverly Gage. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.